hour number two on this Friday. Hope everybody's having a good day. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. We say hello to Richard Deitch from The Athletic. Always good to talk to him. Richard, how you doing?
Oh, there we go. Well, a little delay there. I'm good, guys. How are you?
I wanted to run this by you. We had on a really intriguing guest yesterday that we had no idea where it was going to go, but a couple of days earlier in the week, it was on Tuesday, he spoke at a luncheon here in Nashville, and, you know, everybody knows who he is, but weren't sure what you were getting, and we were blown away with our interview yesterday with Ryan Leaf. You ever done anything with him?
Yeah, I did a long time ago. I think I did a Q&A with him for Sports Illustrated. This, I mean, we're talking way back in the day, maybe late 2000s. But I've heard Leaf a number of times on radio, on television, tell his story. And, you know, it's a really compelling story given everything he went through as a top pick, comparisons to Manning, bottoming out. He may have even actually been in jail for a little bit.
Oh, he was. He was. Yeah, he told us.
And then literally almost like a second relapse. So I have no idea what he's doing now, but if he's motivational speaking and if he's got his life in order, that's really good. But he's a total, an absolute cautionary tale, a little bit of a too cliche. But you know, he's a real example of guys who could not handle a certain level of success or a certain level of professionalism. You know, not every road to leagues like is a perfect road. So if nothing else, I'm glad to see that things are better for him, because in a lot of cases, like, you know, once you go that road of rehab and everything else, it always ends bad, or it just ends.
Yeah, he did not skirt anything with us yesterday. It was pretty impressive to hear. He was here speaking. He's helping people, because he admitted to us. He said, you know, I went from being a famous athlete, the number two pick overall, to being a junkie and in prison. He's like, how many people have that story to tell? And so now he tells that story, and he's helping people who have been, you know, in jail or in prison. And he talks about how difficult it is when you get out. Everybody thinks, oh, you're free, that's great, so life is so much better. And they, you know, you don't realize that nobody wants to hire you. Nobody wants to, you just came from prison or jail. And so he talks about how difficult it is. And so he's there to help people who get out of being incarcerated and trying to help them get on with their life, because it's not about just being out. Because he's talking about how most of them all go back.
Yeah. The one thing, and again, I'm sure I'm a little different now as I've gotten older and I've got kids, but like the one thing you sort of start to realize is just how young professional athletes are. And just think of yourself at 21, 23, 24, you don't have it, especially guys, you just don't have anything figured out. And now they're thrust into, again, I'm not saying it's not a great job, obviously it is, but a ton of pressure, a ton of responsibility, ton of money, people coming at you may or may not be able to trust. And then in many situations, and this is a total indictment of NCAA sports, you're absolutely not prepared, either academically or life skills, for all that stuff. Because too many colleges, essentially, their only job is a profit center. They're just trying to keep you eligible so you can make money for the university. So, and this is not to take any personal responsibility away from Ryan Leaf. We all make our choices. But it is worth thinking about. It's just worth thinking about that. You may think it's all glamorous to be 22, 23 with millions of dollars and this kind of fame, but for some people, they can't handle that. That to them is like the first hit of cocaine or heroin. And like, if nothing else, outside of his honesty in his own life, I'm glad to see Ryan Leaf is now at a productive place where, you know, maybe 55-year-old, 40-year-old Ryan Leaf tells something to some 16-year-old kid and it sticks.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then he passed along something that really is valuable.
Good point. I brought this up at the beginning of the show after watching the Bruins eliminate the Hurricanes last night, so they will sit and wait in the Stanley Cup Final. I then watched the Warriors come back and beat the Trail Blazers last night, and I couldn't go to sleep. It's just one of those nights. Sometimes it happens. And so I happened to be flipping through the channels, and I just caught it at the right time at the very beginning on HBO, and I just wanted to know if you've seen At the Heart of Gold. inside the USA Gymnastics scandal. Little did I know, once I started watching, there was no chance I was going to turn it off until it was over. It's sickening, but I also think it's a must-see. Have you had a chance to check it out?
Have not. Know about it, though. Erin Lee Carr directed it, and I know she spoke to so many of the young women who were assaulted, molested by Nassar. That story still today remains one of the worst black marks in the history of American sports. For so long, nobody believed that women. For so long, no news media covered it, which you know, is really an indictment of news media, until the Indianapolis Star, to their everlasting credit, did a big expose on USA Gymnastics and eventually blew that story off. And USA Gymnastics used a lot of like shady stuff to try to prevent the Indianapolis Star from getting that story. But yeah, I mean, we would need a couple of hours to debate this, but you do sort of step back and wonder, why was this story, why has there not been more of a national outrage for this? Is it because we just accept this, like, we're, you know, in a man doing it in this society? Is it gymnastics? Is it, what is it? But, like, I mean, if you think of just the sheer numbers of what Larry Nassar did, it should still be a massive or bigger story. And it has not been. But, yeah, it's on my list to check out. But
to your point, Richard, to your point.
Still to this day, I wonder why it wasn't covered more.
And by the way, you well said. To your point, you know, immediately with Jerry Sandusky, I feel like there was outrage beyond, you know, epic proportions. And why don't we have the same feelings? Larry Nassar is the devil. He is just as bad as Jerry Sandusky, and yet, to your point, I don't feel like he's been viewed the same way as Sandusky was.
He's not. Yeah, and again, I don't know if that's a football gymnastics thing. I don't know if that's a sexism, misogyny thing. I'm not proclaiming to know what it is, but it is something, and you are dead right. Just go back in your mind and think about the attention and the visceral anger you had, and correctly so, for Jerry Sandusky. The Nassar thing never matched it. And the Nassar thing's worse if you're talking about in sheer numbers. Obviously, both are horrific. You know, to me, I'd have no problems, you know, never seeing Nassar and Sandusky walk the face of the earth again. But there is a difference between sort of how people processed each of those. And, you know, and I'm not sure why. You know, I'm sure there are smarter people than me who might be able to figure that out. But, you know, it's good that these stories are being told. And I do think, at least from reading a lot about it, it does seem to be pretty cathartic for the women who went through it to be able to talk about it, to share those stories, and to nothing else, to put gymnastics, you know, sort of on trial. Like, I do think, and again, I don't have evidence of this, but I do think that the more attention on this, the more it will help to ensure that academies all over the country, like, this stuff is not going to happen again.
Yeah, the cathartic part does come through in the piece. And the thing that comes to mind as you talk about both of these horrible stories is the importance of journalism, right? It came to light because somebody was doing the investigation and put it out there, and that's where it all stemmed from. Had that not happened, who knows where we'd be.
You're right. And by the way, the other thing, and again, I'm not trying to be holier than thou here, because we all got to make decisions in the moment, but think about how many people at Michigan State and the sort of USA Gymnastics and other places enabled and looked the other way on Nassar when they should have either done their due diligence to report, or more horrifically, did not believe the young women who were telling them stuff. This stuff, and this is the same with Sandusky, and this gets back to Paterno, this cannot happen without institutions or the sort of the institutional framework enabling and looking the other way. So there is no, I mean, you know, if I'm talking to obviously a station in Tennessee, so I'm not going to have Penn State people yell at me, but there's no Sandusky without Joe Paterno, and there's no Larry Nassar without Michigan State and USA Gymnastics.
Right, that becomes very evident in the piece.
Shame of the, yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. That's just another shame of the story, are the adults who really did not step up for those kids.
Yeah, it's a good documentary for sure. On another note, Richard, you just wrote about this in light of the lottery the other day, and Zion Williamson getting picked or getting you know, now it looks like he will be on collision course with New Orleans. But you did some measurables on just what kind of TV draw he would be and how the NBA would react, presuming he plays for the Pelicans next year.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would like to thank the gods of karma for not delivering Zion to the Knicks. Because James Dolan does not deserve anything good in our life. So that was good. I was very excited about that. I was actually personally rooting for the Sixers, because that would have been just total chaos if the Philadelphia 76ers with 1% got Zion. we just would have been so awesome. It's interesting. Like, the measurables, like, when it comes to Zion, are interesting in that if you see what Duke did this year, and again, I understand it's not just Zion and Duke, it's a famous program, et cetera, but the numbers for Duke were so extraordinary this year. Like you know, double-digit percentages up on ESPN, NCAA tournament, everywhere else, that he projects, obviously, to be someone of significant interest. Now, obviously, all the basketball people will tell you best prospect since LeBron, most anticipated prospect since LeBron. So in the in talking to people from the marketing world and stuff, they all said, obviously, had he gone to New York or Chicago, like an exponential game changer for the NBA, particularly that those early doubleheader games on the East Coast, you know, those teams would have been must watch. But he'll make New Orleans into like a semi-national team. And if Anthony Davis stays, or if they make a deal for Anthony Davis and get back significant assets, you're going to see New Orleans, you know, this again, assuming Zion is a star, you're going to see New Orleans in the next couple of years pop into one of those teams that gets like 30 national appearances the same way the Celtics, the Sixers, the Lakers do. So it does hurt them a little bit, measurably, that he went to a smaller market, smaller city, but his star should still be great if he delivers on the court.
Last thing for you, Richard. Way back in the beginning days, let's just say 5 or 6 years, maybe 6 to 8 years after the Predators had gotten here, they started to have some good teams. They weren't drawing like you would think, and the Canadian media used to really get on Nashville, like, hey, you guys have this really good team. How are you not selling out every contest? Or, you know, what's going on down there? And we would all look back and go, well, you know, it's not the – It's a process here. You know, it's not a sport everybody here has grown up with. So I'm curious the evolution of basketball in Toronto, because now the Raptors are a pretty big deal. And everywhere I look, there's more and more Canadian basketball players that are coming into the States and being excellent college players, turning into excellent pro players. I mean, Jamal Murray being an example, who played at Kentucky and now is starring for the Nuggets. So how do you think the basketball just being received in Canada is, as opposed to even like 10 years ago?
Yeah, listen, your parallel is perfect. It is a growth process, just like in Nashville, obviously, a football town. It's going to take time for these other sports to grow. So, you know, Canada, the sport of Canada is still hockey. That's not going to change. It's ingrained. You know, has to do with the weather and all that stuff as well. But over the last 10 years, two things that you've seen dramatically. One, the development of Canada basketball as an entity, and that's why you're seeing the Jamal Murray's, RJ Barrett, you're going to see a whole mess of young Canadians in the NBA. And that kind of star just sort of like builds upon itself. That means younger kids see Canadian stars. They want to go out and play basketball. Great athletes in this country decide to play basketball, let's say, as opposed to hockey. So that's part one. Part two, the Raptors over the last 5 years have been really good. So attendance has been awesome at Scotiabank Arena, and that's grown. And the viewership numbers have grown, not dramatically, by the way. I would sort of say more incrementally. But this playoff, the numbers throughout Canada have been amazing. The Kawhi Leonard game peaked at 3.5 million viewers in Canada. Keep in mind, it's not the U.S. It's 33 million people in this country. So, you know, 10th of the country essentially was watching, or 9th of the country was watching that game, which is massive. So this Raptors run will really, really help, I think, in terms of building basketball. But the only reason why I'd say it's a little tenuous, at least on the viewership side, is if Kawhi Leonard does leave and it goes to the Clippers, the Raptors are going to take a step back, and you might not see the heights of the television ratings that you did for this playoffs. But make no mistake, Canada basketball is at a different place now. And I would also say watch the next two Olympics. If you look at the rosters of Canadians in the NBA, you mentioned Jamal Murray, who's awesome. RJ Barrett's coming. They're going to be a pretty good international power.
Where were you for the shot, the Kawhi Leonard shot?
I was watching it at my house. I actually almost went to that game. I'm glad I didn't because I got to see it. But I was watching it at my house with my wife, and I think I blurted out, I cannot effing believe what I just saw. But yeah, and the great part about that is it's not just the game winner, which we've seen, obviously. It was the suspended animation of the four bounces. That just can't be duplicated. And I think, fair to say, honestly, the biggest moment in the history of basketball in Canada was Kawhi's shot. I think that's a fair statement to say.
Interesting stuff. As always, Richard, appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Thanks for doing this.
You got it. See you guys.
Richard Deitch from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work. We'll come back, shift gears, talk a little bit about the Titans. Ticket prices are out for this upcoming season. We'll discuss that on the other side. Darren and Donick, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, ESPN 94.9, Game 2. Official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tomorrow as Nashville SC takes on Charlotte at First Tennessee Park. I almost said at Charlotte. No, they take on Charlotte at First Tennessee Park. So home game tomorrow. Pre-game begins at 6:45 p.m. Kickoff at 7. Only heard on ESPN 94.9 Game 2. That's all powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers. So I was looking at season ticket prices and PSLs. Yes, our favorite word, PSLs, which is still the biggest joke going in the NFL. And some of the sticking points for you, some things you've talked about in the past, and I happen to agree with you, and we've talked about on the show, is especially up in the upper deck, right? That's kind of been the hot button issue. Now, there are no tickets that I can see that you can buy for a season ticket holder, right? This is if you are going to purchase the full season. Let's say you are jumping on board. There is no section where you can get away with not having a PSL. Okay? Now, we have talked about the very, very corner sections of Nissan Stadium, correct? There are four corner sections at Nissan Stadium. Currently, a season ticket, a ticket for those corner sections, just the season ticket for 8 home games would be, and I guess, does that include 2 preseason? Because that they make you do that, right? So I think that probably includes that, is only $400. So those tickets are very, very cheap. But there's still a seat licensing to it, or seat license fee, okay, which is $100. Now, the question I have for you is, what is the point of charging somebody $100 to have season tickets in that section, which I can't even imagine why anyone would have season tickets in that section?
I don't have in front of me what it used to cost. I feel like that number has gone down. So that if that's the case, that's a good thing. I think they are coming to realize that, I mean, this is what I've been harping on for about 5 years now. The value of an upper deck ticket in a football stadium has been going down for a while. It's hard to get people to go to the game and be engaged in the game and want to be there and go through the traffic and the weather and all that stuff. There's only a certain price people are going to be willing to pay. So if they've gone down, and then I think I suspect that they have some. I think they have come down in price there. That's a good thing.
Well, and $400 for a season ticket.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty cheap.
That's not bad.
Like I said, I think that's 10 games.
That's much more.
So you're looking at $40 a game.
Yeah. You know, and some games are worth others, right? They're worth more than others. And then you throw in, it's $400 for the ticket, $100 for the PSL?
Yes.
So $500. Still a little bit higher than likely you would have to pay if you walked up on the street and worked your weight. But when they play the Saints and they play, who else is coming in? The Chiefs, I think, another big game, those tickets are going to be worth more. So that's more in the ballpark. So that's a good thing. They have gone up, I think, in certain ticket prices from last year to this year. And I guess to answer your question, though, why even bother?
What is the point of bothering with $100?
I think just to appease the people who already own PSLs
still.
Rather than just do away with it, which I've been saying they should phase it out and just try to do right by the people that have owned the PSLs for a long time.
Figure out a method of, hey, we'll give you parking, concessions, pro shop concessions. I mean, there's ways
there's
to stroke people to say, hey,
we appreciate that you've done this.
We appreciate that you've done this.
The stadium wouldn't be built had it not been for the original PSL owners, and there's still a lot of them out there.
We'd like to do some nice things for you. Oh, by the way, the more you paid in PSLs, then you know the higher price you paid, then hey, a locker room tour. I mean, there's all kinds of things.
I honestly think if you made a good effort, a good faith effort, most of those people would say, you know what, I get it. We need a new wave of season ticket holders. We need a new wave of people that are excited about this team. They'd be on board with that. You probably have a few that go, hey, this is from a business side, I'm getting screwed here. There's always going to be people that look at it that way. But that's why you make the gesture and approach them and say, here's what we're doing. So I do think they've lowered the cost of some of the upper deck tickets, but I think they've gone up in some of the other areas.
So the two sections next to the corner sections that we just talked about, the four corner sections in the upper deck in Nissan Stadium. So then the two sections next to them are lumped together. So you've got eight total there, right? Eight total, two sections from the corner sections in the upper deck. Their PSL price is $250. And the season ticket price is $520. So not much more, just to be, I guess, a little bit more in. But yet again, what are you doing? $250. What is the point of that? Then the two sections over from there. So you're starting to get a little bit more. I don't know exactly what yard line this is. If you start looking at it, it's still close to the end zone, right? 5-10 yard line, somewhere in there. The PSL price is $500. The season ticket price is $538. That's only $18 more for the ticket price. Total, $18 more. So to sit two more sections over, it barely even goes up on the ticket price, but you double your seat license price. Then the next three sections over, which now you're starting to get into closer to midfield, in the upper deck, it's a $750 seat license, but the price barely goes up. It's $578 for the season ticket price, so only up $40, which could span over 10 games. So that's basically nothing.
Well, do you put any value on the preseason games? I mean, I think we all know.
Well, no, I know, but you have
look
to
at
pay
those
for
the
them.
Same.
I'm saying you
well,
have
right.
to
no,
pay
I,
for them.
You're right.
Which is another sham that we've talked about. And then finally, it's the three sections on both sides in the upper deck. So that would be six sections total, which is 50-yard line. In the upper deck, it's a $1,000 fee for the PSL, and the ticket prices are $665. So really, when you get down to it, the only thing that stands out to me, Willie, is the ticket prices are virtually, I don't even know why anybody would think about the corners, because it's basically nothing. If you're going to sit in the upper deck, it's nothing to sit midfield, you know, or in the good area. That's where you want to be, right? It's really the only difference is the PSL price.
Yes. So as I look at this, I just Googled season tickets comparison, and I came up, and I can't swear that this is 100% accurate. It looks like somebody has got this right. It just says reddit.com, and it lists 2018 and 2019. It does not have the PSL prices. But according to this, pretty much all of the upper deck ticket prices have gone down slightly, which is, to me, a good thing. They've either stayed flat or gone down. Down low, though, the Loge, the Club, and the lower level have gone up as much as 15%. Somewhere in that ballpark for the season ticket price. So that's interesting. So I don't know. It doesn't have the PSL price comparison last year to this year.
Well, I've got
but
that.
They have increased.
Okay.
The actual tickets. So that's interesting. They have had three consecutive winning seasons. So I'm guessing there's more demand there. But my big thing that I've also emphasized, and I wonder what the approach is to this, is to try to get more of your fans in there. The seats that they are selling, how do they try to get those more under control and have people in the Titans colors sitting in those seats?
Well, having a seat license does not do that.
No.
Does not do that at all.
It's you know, ripe for brokers to go up and grab those seats, and that's what's happened.
No doubt. So we gave you the prices in the upper deck. There's still the loge, the club level, their lower level. We'll touch on that. Also, the mayor, David Briley, was on the afternoon show yesterday, and his comments about Nissan Stadium. You'll hear all that on the other side. Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
We've heard the Titans be vocal about wanting to renovate and not build a brand new stadium that is going to cost a whole lot more than actually renovating. What have those discussions been like between you and the Tennessee Titans, and where do those discussions stand, and is that now on the front burner now that this is done with Bridgestone Arena?
Well, it's not quite yet on the front burner, but we have met with the Titans and talked about the lay of the land when it comes to the current contract and its extension, and then about the land surrounding the stadium over there. I think if you look at stadiums around the country, you're starting to see less and less of that just surface level parking and more residential, commercial, retail development in the area around it. And so we've started just to have some pretty open-ended conversations about what's going on other places, what the terms of the lease are, and how we might go about approaching it going forward. But that's about as far as we've made it. I will say that getting to know Amy Adams Strunk through the draft, and it has been great, and she is certainly a great asset to the city of Nashville, and I'm confident we'll be able to work out something that is a win for both the city and the Titans in the long run.
That's the mayor, David Briley. Yesterday, Ryan Borth was sitting in for Jared and Floyd Reese, talking about the Titans and a new stadium. I didn't hear anything about a new stadium. I just heard about development around the stadium. So I guess that remains status quo. That's kind of what we've heard, that there are no plans for anything on the front of a new stadium.
No, the only thing that has been said by Mayor Briley is down the road, if and when the World Cup comes here, and we still don't know if we would get games, right? That's not a given.
Mm-mm.
We're on the list of cities that could get games, that would entail some pretty significant renovation. So that's it. That's all we know. And the Titans have been saying that they are not interested at this time in talking about a new stadium. That could change, though, in 3 or 4 years, for sure. So at least he's building a relationship. Right, at least Amy Adams Strunk and Mayor Briley have gotten to know each other some. That's a start.
Well, yeah, considering where it was 3, 4 years ago.
There's a lot to discuss.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
This is a big thing. This is a long-range thing that has got to be talked about. We don't have to figure it out today, but you got to start getting a vision. Start doing some research on what we need to do. What are our options? What's the best option?
You know, we just told you about the news yesterday with the city striking the deal, and I know that was another reason that David Briley was on yesterday, the new 30-year lease. Remember, that was not an extension. That was basically tearing up the old lease. We had Sean Henry on Friday last week, and this is just a brand-new lease with the Predators, the arena, and the city, the Sports Authority. And the difference is, to me, is one, the location is, both locations are fine. But, I mean, considering we've had this discussion many times as we sat there at the stage on Broadway leading up to the NFL draft, if you had that lot, and I know the Predators were actually tweeting out pictures of what it looked like, basically an empty hole in the mid-90s, what that land looked like. And then, you know, if you were just to buy that now and say, I want to put a new arena there, can you imagine what you would just have to pay alone for that spot? It would just be astronomical. You could never pull it off. And then, oh, by the way, build a state-of-the-art arena. There's no way you could pull it off. So it makes a ton of sense. The location is the best you could possibly imagine. But to me, the difference, Willie, is they have been constantly, as we've talked about, they're always doing upgrades. Always. It's not like one. It would be like, as we said yesterday, we all do that as homeowners for the most part, right? You don't wait 8 years and be like, okay, now we're going to do 9 projects. We're going to renovate anything and everything, and then we're going to wait another 9 years. Typically, if you're a homeowner, you're picking spots here and there, whether if it's bigger projects, smaller projects, but you're usually doing something to your house, whether it's the landscape, whether it's painting, or bigger projects. They're just certain things you have to tackle as a homeowner. It's no different with owning a facility, whether it's an arena or a stadium. And yes, Nissan Stadium has, after we griped and moaned on this show for years, and certainly you are at the forefront of painting light towers, they have done upgrades. Not massive upgrades, but they've done
but
some.
That's, but that's
they
been
did,
2 years.
They did nothing.
That was 2 years
that's
ago.
That's because they had done nothing.
Yeah, they were
forever.
Playing catch
so
up.
Just, we're talking about just painting and, you know, simple stuff. These are stuff, it's like I said,
remember
owning
the,
a home.
The flags. The flags.
Right, the old.
They were worn
ripped
and tattered.
And torn.
It was even stuff like the landscaping around the stadium. It had just really gone downhill.
It's basically like your HOA sending you, you know, a memo saying, hey, mow your lawn, dodo brain. You know, you keep up with the community. Keep up with your neighborhood.
Don't you be afraid to get an edger out.
Because that happens. If you have an HOA, they're going to tell you if you're not doing stuff. And that's basically what was happening with the Titans. So, yes, they've done stuff. But they're not doing constant projects all the time. Have they done projects? Yes. They've spent millions of dollars, and they've done projects. But Bridgestone Arena, we've seen what it's morphed into today because they've done, most cases, massive projects. When you rip out basically all the seats and replace them, that's a massive
and
project.
And in fairness, the Titans recently have done a lot of the seats.
I understand that. They've done that too. But the Lexus Lounge and some of the other things that they've done, and there's more things coming. These are pretty massive. We talked about the lighting, right? They've done the light. They changed the lights where now you literally flip the switch in Bridgestone Arena and they're there. The LEDs, where before it took, you know, it was like old school. You hear the hum. Takes 30 minutes for them to warm up. Those days are long gone. So what do you do? What are your renovations going to be? What are you going to be? We're talking about something you haven't really touched. You haven't been doing anything. So if you haven't been doing any upkeep, to me, with your home, then you say, all right, now we're going to do projects. Isn't the list going to be really, really long? Isn't it going to be too much to really take on? If you haven't been spreading it out and just tackling things year in and year out. So what do they do? How do you do that? If you're not interested in something new, then what are you going
to
do?
Well, it also is attached to what will people be willing to pay to sit in the upper deck, for starters, because there are some amenities you get, but even those people, like it's all relative. You know, what are the benefits? How much fun is it for those people to sit in the seats? Is it worth the money you're paying? Regardless of the team, you know, how the team is on the field plays into it a large degree, but it's also your experience, the bang for your buck. And that's why I've been saying, and this is almost regardless of stadium, but especially that stadium, that the value of an upper deck ticket to me is right around, it's around $20 to me. That's the way I feel. And they still have the season ticket around, you know, it's $400 for the season ticket, $100 for the PSL minimum, right? And not the best part of the upper deck.
Well, that's the very corner section.
The corners of the upper deck. So that's still $50 a game. That's still a little high. And then you get back to what you're discussing here. What has been done to that upper deck over the years to keep up, to upgrade, you know, just like the way you would invest in your house? Not much, right? You go up there. You could take an elevator, but it takes a while to take the elevator up there. You got to walk up all the ramps. You got to deal with the traffic. There's not great options for your concession stand. It's very straightforward. So there's not much that would bring you up there. You got to really want to go up there and be there.
There's no real lure to be up
right.
there.
Right, and I'm not saying...
Other than cheaper prices.
I'm not saying you got to have the nicest upper deck in the league or anything, but the cost of the ticket should reflect what you get for that ticket. If you just want to keep it basic, well, then the ticket should be probably a little less expensive than it is. But so we're talking about a couple of different things here, but it is again, what has to be the vision. Do you want to make this existing stadium the best it can be, and what do you want to invest at that? You got to invest something. You can't do nothing between now and the end of the lease. You have to constantly be doing some things to keep up so it doesn't just start cracking and rotting and stuff like that. And then the other thing is, what happens when the lease is up? Are we working towards building a new stadium, or are we going to put like some massive money into it to overhaul it and make it way nicer than it appears right now? They don't have a plan right now.
The way I look at it, if you want to change the experience, this is where I was going with this. You're not going to do that with the stadium. No one is going to go to your stadium and walk away and go, wow.
No, but I don't know if I would. We went to Heinz Field for U2, right?
Yes.
There's
no wow.
There's not a lot of wow.
I understand. That's where I'm going with this. So to get the wow factor, you have to go back to what the experiences were like and why it was a wow factor. Even though it was a brand new stadium, still, it's not like it's all about the experience. It's all about, you know, you have to walk away. The wow factor has to be, if you're not going to be wowed by the incredible concessions or this and that, then you have to be wowed by the atmosphere, right? That's what's going on at Bridgestone, right? People walking out, the wow factor is just the craziness, the entertainment value, the fans, it's loud, it's a show. You have to have that then. Then you have to amp up. You have to make it a show, a production, where really it's more about, nobody's going to get wowed by it with 18,000 empties, right? So you have to create that atmosphere, and that's why we're talking about the PSLs and the ticket prices. To me, you've got something we've talked about, is you've got to get this thing back to, one, a real home field advantage is what they used to have, and two, when they had that, there was a real wow factor. People walked away going, wow, that place is loud. And the opponents left going, that place is really hard to play in because it's loud and those fans are crazy. We've talked to enough formers that would come in here and say, man, we dreaded coming here to play the Titans because it was such a tough place to play. So if you're not going to have the wow factor with the stadium, then don't you have to have it in the stands and, you know, with the whole production of 3 hours?
That's a big element of it. Definitely.
I'm looking at a PSL right now in the lower level for $12,000. Now, that's 50-yard line. I get it. Lower bowl, 50-yard line. But how do you make that work? How do you ask somebody to give $12,000 just to have season tickets, just to start there?
And be loyal enough to show up every week,
right?
Because a lot of times those are your corporate people paying that.
Yep.
Right? And so who ends up sitting in those seats?
We will come back and wrap up the second hour with more news coming from Memphis. Penny Hardaway has struck again. We'll tell you about it to wrap up hour number two next. You just made the list coming up at noon. There's a guy making a charge up in New York. Bethpage Black, PGA Championship Day 2. Who's making the charge?
Well, Brooks Koepka has yet to tee off. That's coming up in about an hour, 12:49 p.m. to be exact, after the 63 that he shot yesterday. A big story, Jordan Spieth has had a great round. He is through 17 at 4-under for the day, so he's only 2 strokes back at the moment. He's 5-under for the tournament, so that would be a big story because he has slumped, right? He's not had a great year, but we know how talented he is. Koepka's a pretty good talent as well, so this is shaping up pretty interesting. Daniel Berger is now finished with his second round. Shot a 66 today on the heels of a 70 yesterday, so he's 3 back. Also at 4-under and 3 back is Dustin Johnson. He is through 17 and is 3-under for the day, so he's having an excellent round. How about this name, Darren? I'm going to take a crack at it. I'll be honest, I don't know. Jazz Janawananand?
Sure.
Jazz Janawananand is 3-under through 14. Tommy Fleetwood hasn't teed off yet for his second round. He's also 3-under. And then that would bring us to some of the other notables. You have Luke List, the Vanderbilt Commodore, 2-under. Yesterday, he tees off later this afternoon at 1:11. So List, this will be an interesting round for him. Phil Mickelson is through 16 today and is one under for the tournament. So he's still hanging around, the big crowd favorite up there. Other guys, Tiger Woods is about to tee off a little bit later. In fact, they just showed him warming up on the putting green. And, of course, he is two over for the tournament. Who else do you want to know? Oh, Brant Snedeker. He's teed off in his second round. And so he's through one, even for the day, par on the first hole, four over 74 yesterday. So he's got some work to do. He is below the projected cut line, which right now sits at three over. So he needs a good round.
Anfernee Penny Hardaway has struck again, struck gold, a five-star recruit, Precious Achiuwa. I believe that's how you say it, Achiuwa. That's his, what, second five-star recruit?
Yeah, second five-star, and it's his fourth. Well, he has four five-star, two five-stars and four stars.
Currently, wait, hold on, whoa, whoa, whoa. He has six guys?
Yes.
He has four stars plus two five stars?
Yes, and also Trendon Walford, who is a five star out of Alabama, is making his decision on Monday, and Memphis is one of the top picks of his list.
Where are all the guys who were on the team last year? He had six scholarships to give? For next year?
I don't know if you know this, but sometimes new coaches run off players. Have you ever heard of that?
Well, he was the coach last year.
He was.
All right, let me rephrase that. 247 says he has five stars and two five stars. No, 2 5 stars and 5 4 stars.
I mean,
they did field the team yesterday.
They did.
Last year,
they
right?
Did.
They did
yep,
have
they
guys.
Played. They had.
Did they have all seniors?
They did. They had all seniors. They all graduated with honors.
I mean, I haven't kept up with it.
They currently have the number one recruiting class in the country.
That's a lot of scholarships to have available.
Yeah, Kentucky's second right now with 3 5 stars and 2 4 stars. And then Arizona's also on that list, too. They're number three.
We have talked about this. This is why they hired him, to get recruits. Now, what can he do with those recruits? They are going to be loaded. There's going to be huge expectations and now real pressure in Memphis, again, with Tigers basketball. So wanted to pass that along. They land yet again another five-star recruit and currently have the number one recruiting class in the country. Michael Lark tweeted at me, at DMAC_1025. My season tickets in section 233, which are the club seats, went up $1,800 for the pair. I had to move them to the goal line, and that is $600 more than my 40-yard line seats. $1,800 in the club. I was looking at, and I didn't pass it. The club level, all the PSLs are $1,500.
I understand.
The tickets, there's a variety of ranges depending on, you know, corner and work your way in. They go from anywhere from $1,436 for season ticket price all the way to over $3,000, which would be the ones in the middle, $3,135 to be exact. So that's a big range in the club level. I mean, that's a difference of almost $2,000 from sitting on the end in the club to the middle in the club.
I am not a businessman. I understand that the cost goes up, and the team has been much better, right? Three straight 9-7s is nothing to sneeze at. But that seems to be, the, you know, 14% hike, 15%. In some cases, that seems pretty high. That seems like a significant increase. True? Does it sound like it to you? Like, if it goes up 3 to 5%, okay, you know, nobody likes to see it go up, but costs go up. Every team is going to try to find the right ticket pricing for them. Sometimes ticket prices go up, but that's...
Seems pretty steep in one off season.
Pretty steep.
Kathy Morgan on Twitter. She tweets at us and said, I had Titans season tickets from 2012 to 2014, gave them up for Preds tickets. I've been thinking about getting Titans tickets again, but I'm not going to pay for the PSL, which is what we've been talking about. I understand. I mean, I completely get that. When I played, just tweeted at me and said, Darren, you do know that the on-field product is working. That's 80% of the wow. Adelphia was never a wow. The team was. Preds have a perfect storm. Good on the ice product and wow. when they fail or when they fall off, WOW won't sell tickets. Agree with some of that. Don't agree with a lot of it. One, you had the perfect storm with the Titans, too. It was a brand new stadium. It was a brand new NFL team in this market. And so it was the perfect storm. People were going to go because it was all new. NFL was new in this city. It wasn't about – people didn't go into 1999 going, I'm buying tickets because I know this team is going to go 13-3 and they're going to the Super Bowl. You watch. You watch and see. No. It was new. And then, of course, yeah, they made the run to the Super Bowl in the first year of a new stadium. So then you had the winning – and then you came back and had the best record in the regular season the following year. So, yes, that was in play, but a lot of it was just newness. And, yes, oh, by the way, then they made it really easy because they were really good right out of the gates. With the Predators, I do think a lot of it is the experience. If you spend any time in there, and we do every home game, just look around. You see a lot of kids. You see a lot of teenagers. You see a lot of young people having a whole lot of fun. And, of course, they want the home team to win. They're rooting for the Predators. But even in the losses, and they lost way too many home games last year, look around. People were still having a whole lot of fun because it was about the experience. Now, yes, it is probably always going to happen in any sport, in any market. If you continue to keep doing losing, especially in large amounts, no matter how good your entertainment value is, yes, tickets will drop off. That's how it works in any market, in any sport. But I agree with a lot of you said, with a lot of what you said, but disagree on some of it. We'll come back. You just made the list to kick off the third hour. That's next.